You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, this may sound counterintuitive, but is now an excellent time to visit Paris? Is it okay to love hackers now? Should Republicans and Democrats date? And are we finally helpless against germs? Let's meet the friends. With his eyes turned toward the heavens, searching for enlightenment to pass on to you, it's Chris Martin.
Huge news today, Phil. You just don't hear discussions about this topic very often anymore. It's really eye-opening. You're not going to want to miss an update on the biggest story of the day.
I am speechless.
Should be.
That may be the biggest and most ominous sounding headline you've ever done.
Although being speechless in radio isn't helpful.
No, it isn't. So we'll keep talking just to fill the air. Oh, by the way, if you listen to this program on iTunes, thank you very much for doing that. And please do leave a comment and a 5-star review. It's simple. You know what? Even if you don't listen to the show on iTunes, log into iTunes, find the show, and leave a 5-star comment and a review. Listen to us on some other platform, but go leave a review on iTunes. It does help the show. It really does. All right, folks at iTunes hate me now.
Did we just crash the site?
Maybe we did. Anyway, thanks for your 5-star review. Let's get the program started. Chris, oh my gosh, should I stand? Should I sit? Should I strap in?
You're just going to have to brace yourself.
Okay.
Brace yourself, Phil, because this is big news.
What is it?
Tonight, around midnight, if you go outside and adjust your vision properly, you might just see a few meteors.
Really?
You believe that?
I don't believe it.
I like the idea of all these big news stories going around. You know, like today was actually a pretty big news day on some subjects we're going to cover later, but
yeah.
I like the idea of coming off with something nice and soft. There's going to be a little meteor shower today, tonight. It's called the Leonids shower.
Leonids?
Yeah, I thought it was Leonidas, which would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been cool because he's the guy that says, "Tonight we dine in hell."
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
That guy.
It's called the Leonids shower because it emanates from the Leo constellation, which is that nice lion-shaped constellation.
Yeah.
Out yonder.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's coming from the lion's mane. This comes through our solar system about every 33 years. NASA says they weren't expecting a big show, but the moon just happens to be in the perfect position to where if you go out tonight, find yourself a nice spot, let your vision adjust to the night sky.
Yeah.
You might catch something like 15 meteors an hour.
Yeah. Well, you know, the way to adjust your eyes when you're outside in the dark is to kind of move your eyes back and forth for a little bit.
Oh, is that what does it?
Yeah.
I thought you were supposed to turn the brightest flashlight on your phone on it directly into your vision.
That doesn't work at all.
No.
You'll
definitely see spots in the
sky. Don't close your eyes either, but kind of look left and right real fast, like you're watching a fast-paced, like a ping pong game. Do that for a little bit. Not too long, because your muscles will get sore. But, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 times, and that works. You know where I learned that? From reading Clear and Present Danger, the Tom Clancy book, with the special ops guys that they sent down to get the drug lords. You know, they were hiding in plain sight, but they did a lot of their work in the desert out there in Mexico or wherever it was. I forget where now. Colombia, maybe. In the dark.
Yeah.
And that's how they got their eyes to adjust to the darkness quickly.
That's great that they made a book of that movie. That's awesome. Useful information, though,
yeah,
too.
You know, it is. Sure. I do that all the time. It's funny what you pick up in books, isn't it?
It is. You never know when you're going to be able to
great story,
to see
great
it
book,
night,
like 400 or 500 pages, and that was my takeaway.
All right. I'm going to take advantage of that and start adjusting my vision by throwing my eyes back and forth at night.
Yeah.
Hopefully help make the adjustment. You will be able to see the meteors for throughout the rest of the month, but tonight's the best night to see it.
And get out of the city lights if you can.
That's the problem. It's all the ambient lights. That's why you need to adjust your eyes. So go into REM.
All right. REM. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rapid eye movement.
See?
Now, forever, the word hacker has been associated with bad guy, evil guy, who's going to mess up your stuff.
your computer, your company's computer, going to get into your bank account and steal all your money, sell your personal information to other ne'er-do-wells. This is who hackers have been made out to be, including some of the most well-known hacker organizations that somehow we can't find them and bring them down. But all of a sudden, it seems to me that strange times call for strange bedfellows, and all of a sudden we love hackers, don't we?
We're celebrating them. We're celebrating one group of hackers anyway, Anonymous, who you've probably heard of at this point. They're responsible for all kinds of leaks, celebrity-wise, movie studios. They've been involved in all kinds of stuff in the news. But as of late, we're actually, like you said, Phil, sort of enjoying or appreciating what Anonymous is doing, because following the attacks on Paris last Friday, the unlikely hero Anonymous is stepping in to fight the terrorist group known as ISIS.
Go hackers. Go hackers.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Maybe you call them ISIL or Daesh. Who knows?
Trying to keep the kids in the audience happy.
Anonymous, like you said, is a group of anonymous hackers. And they released a YouTube video on Saturday vowing cyber war against ISIS. They used the guy from V from Vendetta. You know that mask from V from Vendetta?
No, you know who that is. That's... Oh, why can't I remember that guy's name? He's a famous guy.
Is he?
Yeah.
I just know him from the movie.
What's the mask guy? It's give me a second. I'll remember. Keep talking.
They should make a book from that movie. It's a really good movie. The Anonymous is using the hashtag OpISIS and hashtag OpParis. They already claim responsibility for exposing and releasing thousands of extremist social media accounts and website accounts
Guy Fawkes.
Over the past few days. Guy Fawkes. So what did he
That's
do?
That's who he was. He was a protest dude. And I want to say it was a Canadian deal. Anyway, you're asking me questions that I can't answer right away. I'm going to have to look it up because I knew it at one time. But Guy Fawkes, the mask, has become a common brand and a convenient placard for protesters around the world who may, just like me, not remember who Guy Fawkes was.
Yeah, and if you're not familiar with the Guy Fawkes mask, it's sort of a full white mask of a guy that has squinted eyes and also a mustache, like a thin curled mustache. Is that right?
I think a little beard. I think it's a
little
it's
beard.
A, it's
yeah,
a Van Dyke, isn't it?
Okay.
Yeah. I think that's what kind of beard that is.
Well, it looks cool. It's synonymous with Anonymous now. Mm. And apparently these guys started their work back in January after the Hebdo attack, but they've been stepping up their game in what they call the biggest operation ever. Mm-hmm. It does feel kind of comforting to know that these guys are on the side of good. In this case, anyway, you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm rooting for them. I think it's fun. And, okay, Guy Fawkes, just a quick, anybody can do this now. You don't have to be smart anymore. We have Google, right?
Thank goodness, because I am
yeah.
not smart.
He was a notorious traitor after Queen Elizabeth I died in 1603.
Yeah.
Okay. And part of the famous gunpowder plot of 1605 and bonfire night, all these kinds of things that are associated with Guy Fawkes.
And when Anonymous released this YouTube video, which I saw, it's all in French, so I couldn't understand it, but I still watched all 2.5 minutes of it.
Mm-hmm.
He's sitting behind a news desk,
yeah.
this Guy Fawkes masked individual,
yeah.
with sort of a news scroll to the left of him,
mm-hmm.
and their emblem to the right, and he's basically saying in French, you just made a big mistake. We are going to turn all our attention onto you guys over at ISIS, and
yeah.
we're going to do everything we can to
yeah.
disrupt your operation.
Nothing they can do about it.
With some yeah. real crazy music, like real ominous music, too. Well, ISIS's response
yeah.
is, you guys are crazy. We don't really have that many
you know
social
what?
Media outlets, or
Please.
We're not using that much technology
Please.
To communicate.
They have a customer service desk for would-be terrorists.
Is
they
that
do.
Right?
They have 6 full-time guys who answer a hotline and will talk you through whatever it is that you want to do, set up encryption on your computer, that sort of thing. So they are highly, and this all came out today.
I mean,
it was in the Wall Street Journal or something like that. Yeah, highly technical and highly advanced when it comes to things related to computers. So the Anonymous guys are going to get to them.
Good.
All right, 2 huge stories right out of the block.
Bang. And
here's all I've got. You want to know what Jenga means, the word Jenga?
Jenga means very frustrating game of blocks.
It's what language do you think Jenga is from?
Jenga. I don't know. I'm going to say some sort of African language.
It's Swahili. You are right.
Nailed
African.
It.
Yeah, and it means to build. The woman who invented the game was born in Ghana, came up with it when she lived there, and she wouldn't let Hasbro change the name when they bought it from her. In fact, they wanted to change it, probably to building blocks or something like that, or frustrating blocks, or block this, bro.
Yeah. Challenging game.
Yeah.
It elicits a lot of emotions.
It does. And so now when you say Jenga, sometimes people say Jenga even if they're not playing the game.
They just say it just because.
It transcends frustrating block game and becomes part of your vernacular.
Yeah. Do you just use it as like a punchline or like an exclamation point?
Yeah.
Like Monopoly.
Right, exactly. So when you open up Monopoly, no.
Oh, okay.
Like when you open up the pantry and a whole bunch of stuff falls out on your head.
Oh, okay. I thought it was like a celebratory term.
And a can of pork and beans lands on your bare toe, and you yell, Jenga!
Yeah.
Right?
That makes sense.
Of course it does.
When do you yell Jenga again? Do you yell it after the blocks fall?
Yeah.
You do. Then you go, Jenga.
Yeah, because the other person, because it's a two-person or four-person game. I mean, somebody wins.
Uh-huh.
I don't know.
Usually the ones with the steadiest hands.
And then I pick up, when I lose, I stand up and I turn over the table.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Just end it all?
And I leave. And I say, you clean it up.
Uh-huh. That sounds like a sore loser or winner.
Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen.
Next. Not in the studio or on the show, but Charlie Sheen. Next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com. All right, here's something to think about. The surface area of a cat, including all of the fur, is about the same as a ping pong table.
Wait, what?
And this is according to the dweebs over at Live Science. So in other words, if you were to skin a cat, all of it, you know, the feet, the nose, the ears, the whole thing, the surface area of a cat. You'd be able to cat fur line your ping pong table.
Well, first of all, you know, Phil, there's lots of ways to skin a cat.
Of course there are.
I don't know if you've ever heard that old cliche before.
Never. No, this is the first time.
But then once you've skinned it, obviously there's lots of things you can do with it.
Yeah, sure. Now, this is not what they're suggesting. They're suggesting that if you measure the surface area, it's the same surface area as the ping pong, the table tennis tabletop.
Measure it like a tailor measuring you for a suit.
Yeah.
You would measure the cat and then from there you
realize. Well, they probably have better ways of doing that now. They put the cat in front of, you know, like laser beams or something, and a computer says... spits out an equation that tells you exactly how much surface area there is.
Seems like a big cat. I don't know if I believe it. A table tennis table?
Yeah.
No way.
You don't think so?
No, that's a pretty big table, and cats aren't that big.
Well, think about, you know, the difference between diameter and circumference, right?
Uh-huh.
So if you were to measure from the belly to the tailbone of a cat, it would be like 4 or 5 inches, right? If you just measure it straight. But if you measure around the circumference, it might be, who knows, a foot and a half.
Wow.
Right?
That's amazing.
And then you have all of that square inch area from shoulder to hip bone and everything else. So when you measure all around like that, then sure, I could see it.
Sort of a disturbing image, but I could see it too. Imagine what you could cover with a dog.
Or with a human.
Ooh. All right.
Well, it was sick and twisted today.
Morbid story of the day.
Speaking of sick, Charlie Sheen.
Mm.
Has made an announcement that no doubt you've heard by now, but if not, this will be news to you, but certainly it has some repercussions potentially going in two different directions. So tell us, what's the latest with Charlie Sheen? What has he admitted to?
Okay, the story broke yesterday. I'm surprised it didn't break a lot sooner, but Charlie Sheen announced on the Today Show with Matt Lauer this morning that he's HIV positive, and he's known that he's been HIV positive for 4 years now, four plus years.
Oh, man, 4 years.
Which also might account for his, shall we say, crazy behavior about 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago now.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, was Charlie Sheen shooting up heroin for a while?
He says that he has not and does not use needles, and that is not how he can contract
the disease. Because he did check himself into rehab for a bit.
Yes, he did. I think he was just doing tremendous amounts of cocaine and booze, though.
Okay.
And needed some help getting off some of those things. And actually, but successfully got off that stuff for a while, I believe. But
now, over the course of 4 years, is it possible that Charlie Sheen has had unprotected casual sex?
He says that he has. The interview was actually really good. Matt Lauer did a good job. He always does. And he says he has had some unprotected sex. Charlie says that he also told every partner that he was with that he had the disease within that 4 years.
Oh, do you believe
years.
That?
No, I don't believe it. I don't believe it for a second.
If you're in the heat of passion, okay, with a young lady that you just met, who and maybe she's a little famous too. I mean, you really have it for this gal. And you're in a hotel room in a city far away from anybody who might ever know about what's going on. So it's just between you and the semi-famous lady who's really hot to trot for you as well. And you're just about to proceed with the activities. And she says, oh, by the way, I'm HIV positive.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what goes through your head there for a moment? And then what happens moments after that? Do you proceed with the activities, or do you stop and, while I collect my stuff and leave?
For me, it would probably turn into a therapy session.
Really?
But yeah, there certainly would be no engagement in any sort of sexual
activity. There might be some therapeutic cuddling. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, maybe, but yeah.
You might not even cuddle.
I'd turn into Curious Chris, and I'd just be like, oh, really? How did that happen? That's terrible. How are you dealing with it? Anything I could to just prolong the time until I could part ways, really.
Sneak out.
Yeah.
Excuse me. I left something in the lobby of the hotel.
And by the way, there's already reports of some of Charlie's angels, we'll call them,
yes,
coming out and saying he didn't tell me about it. Some women he did tell, several of them he did. He did claim that he used protection the vast majority of the time, but he said that the women that maybe that he told or didn't tell were extorting him for millions of dollars.
Well, I mean, in this litigious society, so how do you, they were extorting him because they were saying, oh, if you don't pay me, I'm going to go public with the fact that you told me you had HIV.
Is that what
they were doing?
There was one girl that went into his bathroom and saw the medication and was like, what? And then took a picture of the medication and then sent him a tweet or some sort of social media afterwards or direct messaging saying, look at what I took a picture of. Either you pay me X amount of dollars or I'm going to the press.
The fact that she knew what that was, unless it says use daily to treat HIV.
Which it probably does, doesn't it? I mean,
I don't know.
Most medications do have some sort of description of what they're for.
Are you one of those people who goes into visits, a friend's or whoever, an acquaintance's bathroom, and you open up the medicine chest and snoop around?
Instantly. And then what I'll do actually is I'll brush my teeth with their toothbrush and use their deodorant.
You will?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
No kidding. You really leave a mark.
By the way, Charlie Sheen's doctor came on in the interview with Matt Lauer, and it was a real interesting segment because it sounded to me like a PSA where the doctor was telling every girl in the nation that the HIV that Charlie has is nearly undetectable and it's okay to still have sex with him.
Oh.
That it's not transferable. Because of the medication he's used. The medication's so good. And the doctor's just sitting there. It was like every question was like, so can Charlie have sex now? And he was like, yes, Charlie can have sex. It was like a PSA announcement.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The other thing I noticed is Charlie has a terrible stutter now.
Did he not used to?
I don't know if he always did or if it was just this morning, but everything he said started with, well, or, he was having trouble getting his sentences out.
Yeah, well, that's got to be a difficult thing to come public with, even if you're a personality as big as he is.
And when you're really thinking about what you're going to say next, maybe that's what causes you to sort of stutter about it.
You know, when you think about today's rock and roll stars, there are a handful of them. You can tell when a rocker is the real deal, can't you? As opposed to somebody who, you know, was a band geek in high school and figured out how to package and market themselves and they became rock stars. You know the difference. There's the real deals and then there's those guys. You know, like a lot of the street cred, quote unquote, thug rappers out there were in the chess club and science club in high school and just were smart guys and figured out, okay, I got to dirty my image up a little bit and I'll become famous as a rapper. A lot of guys are like that. So how badass was Janis Joplin? I think we can all agree that she was the real deal. Yeah?
Yeah.
She was not a band geek. She was a freak. Janis Joplin's last boyfriend told a story about one time when five Hell's Angels crashed their place, he and Janis's place, at night, and then started eating all their food. And he said he was scared because they had guns. But Janis went out there, scolded them, and got them to replace the food, every drop of it, from the store, and come back and clean up the place. And they did it.
I believe it.
How badass was she?
No, I'd do whatever she told me to do.
Would you?
Mm-hmm.
Anything?
Just because she's badass.
In the presidential election cycle, ideological nerves can become a little raw, don't you think? But once you leave the political arena and move into the bedroom, should Republicans and Democrats date? Our relationship expert joins us next on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Hey, you can't avoid talking a little politics from time to time during an election cycle. Everybody's talking, you know, Trump, Hillary, whoever. They've all got their candidate. And their platform, their ideology, and it gets in the way sometimes. You get in some arguments, not just with friends and coworkers, but with your significant other. Which raises the question, should you even date if you're different political parties? Interesting question, and a lot of people have done that to various degrees of success. Joining us live now is the author of the book, What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Women in a Relationship. She's an expert on depression, women's issues, attaining happiness, and a regular visitor to this program, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. Hi, Doctor.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent, even better now that you're here.
Oh, how nice of you.
Now, most couples argue about a lot of things, money, religion, what to watch on TV, driving, heck, the time of day. Why not hedge your bets and add disparate ideological beliefs into the mix, huh?
Why not? It's hard enough. We may as well.
Yeah. And, well, are you being serious?
I'm being serious and funny because in a marriage, there's so many variables. And here's something else that's actually serious. I mean, research has shown that couples who vary in their political arenas do have more problems and they have more pressure on getting along because they disagree more often. But here's something interesting, that sexually, people who are more conservative, the Republicans, actually 53% have better sex lives. That's what they report. Don't ask me how they got this research.
Are these Republicans having sex with Democrats? And
that's a
having...
good question, but the answer is no.
Oh.
Maybe that's why they're having fun. No, they're having sex with each other.
Oh, okay.
With it sounds incestuous. No, they're having
sex it does.
With... Republican people that are conservative like themselves.
Hey, we're going to a Republican sex party. Whee!
Yes, this is cool. Can you believe that?
No, I can't.
You know, the Democratic Party usually has it more often, but they're not as satisfied. So think about that one, and there's a reason for it, believe it or not.
What is the reason?
Aren't you curious? I am too.
Yes.
And the reason is that Republicans stay in a place where they tend to repeat the same thing. So if something works, they just repeat it. They're not that flexible.
If it ain't broke,
that's it.
Don't fix it.
And it seems to work in their sex lives.
So yeah.
they have something over the Democratic Party.
That was great, honey. We've been doing it like this for quite a while, and sure, it's wonderful. I love you and all of that. But hey, you know what? Sadie down the street, she's a Democrat. What do you say we invite her into the bedroom for a little ideological threesome?
No, thank you. It's not going to work.
No? You're not a fan of threesomes. I know that.
Well, let's put it this way. If a Democrat is with a Republican, it's not going to be as great.
Oh.
So why change things around?
Well, aren't there some there's some famous and apparently successful dual-party relationships out there, aren't there?
There are, and they know how to negotiate.
Oh. The one everybody thinks of is Mary Madeline and James Carville, right?
That's right.
Now, anybody who can stick around with James Carville for more than a couple of minutes is a saint.
I'm telling you, I don't know what's going on in that household, something we don't know yet.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, he looks like he just stepped off of an alien spaceship. And second, he doesn't have the most pleasant voice to listen to. Not that mine's great, but his isn't as great as mine.
You have a great voice. The truth is that when somebody's attracted to somebody, you always wonder, what is it about that person that I don't see? So there's a mystery to that as well.
Right, and people always go to that one place when there is a mystery about that. Well, he's got to be great in bed or something like that,
something
right?
Something has to be going on there.
Yeah. All right, so let's tear this apart a little more. What's a good way to handle the inevitable when your candidate wins and you're a Democrat and a Republican?
Rub it in their face ruthlessly.
Yes? Is that the right way, Dr. Birnbaum?
Yeah, hi, how are you? You know, I get such good questions on this show. No, I've done several of these shows. No one asks me these questions.
Well, this is Chris over there, by the way, with the great questions.
Hi, Doctor.
Speak to you. Sure. What happens when what happens again? I'm sorry.
Oh, when your candidate wins, and now you've got to continue the loving relationship with your significant other whose candidate lost.
Well, you know, what happens really, there's an answer to this, believe it or not. What happens is...
A lot of unbelievable stuff with you today, Doctor.
You know, I don't know. I guess I'm unbelievable today. Maybe it's the change of weather. It's 10 degrees colder here. It's 40 in the 40s.
All right. Now, get a hold of yourself and give me a straight answer, will you?
I'm trying to compose myself.
Okay, good.
And here's the answer. When people disagree, they're more extreme, and their children are more extreme in what it is that they want politically speaking.
Oh.
Because they are more involved in the disputes between the parents. And when they're not disagreeing with each other, their children are more moderate in the way they think.
Oh.
And they don't feel the stress and the tension of having to make the right decision or not.
So if Republicans and Democrats procreate, if they reproduce, their children are more likely to be what? Fascists?
They're more likely to be extreme in the way they think.
Yeah, maniacal, what's the word I'm thinking of? The people that want to take over the world. Despotic, starts with an M, right? Megalomaniacal.
I thought they'd become independent.
Despotic fascist children.
Okay, I have to write that down.
Yes.
If I know how to spell it, but that'll be later.
Now, should the couples come together and they have disparate political beliefs, should one or the other try to convert the other?
Well, sometimes what happens is in a marriage, you start seeing each other, the other person's angle and side of things. So that could be interesting or boring, but should you start seeing that, you know, we have so many decisions to make in our lives, and then when we think about the economy, we think about equality with our career and careers for women, wages, minimum wages.
Yeah.
When we think of all these things that we have to make decisions, and then, of course, it's international warfare and nuclear bombing and dictatorships, terrorism. You know, there's a lot of stress that we have to carry. And to be able to speak to someone and be on the same page could be very comforting.
Yeah, right. And if you're both on the same page, then you should go to the ballot box. Otherwise, you just cancel each other out. One final question, just to make sure we're clear on the point, because I think I gathered this from your opening statement. But do you recommend Republicans and Democrats date? Categorically, yes or no?
Categorically, they don't often date. And do you know that during dating, on dating sites, that people prefer that is more important to them than the education or the height or even the appearance of a person.
Well, because for some people, their religion is politics and vice versa.
That's exactly right. So all this is important. Even parents today, it used to be in the 60s, that about 5% parents said it's important who their children date as far as politics is concerned. Today, it's 40%. So we're really changing.
Hello, sir. I'd like to ask you for your daughter's hand in marriage. What? You're a Republican. There's no way this is a Democratic family. You're out of here, son.
And to go a step further, even where you live, you tend to live in a more polarized situation where if people are more Republican,
amazing.
You're either that or you become that.
The book is What Price Power? An In-Depth Study of the Professional Woman in a Relationship. And no doubt you're working on another book by now, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum, are you?
Yes, I am. You know, the book is called?
No.
You know, Brace Yourself.
Is it unbelievable?
No, the book is called Life Begins at 60.
Oh, how about that? And
you
just
have a lot to look forward to.
That's right. I mean, you. How old is your youngest baby now?
8.
Okay. See.
No more baby.
Give people a perspective. That's a
that's a
school kid now.
Perspective to have something to look forward to, and not to fear getting older because it only gets. I know I'm saying just words till you're experiencing, and then you'll know what I'm talking about.
Listen to you, Dr. Frieda Birnbaum. Always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks again
always
for being here for us.
Here. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye. Now, while you slather on the antibacterial soap to avoid getting sick from the coughing, sneezing, sniffing of your inconsiderate cubicle mate who came to work with a bad cold, are the germs getting the upper hand, and are antibiotics even effective anymore? What you need to know from an expert. Next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. The Director General of the World Health Organization this week said that there's a rise of antibiotic resistance in the world, and she calls it a global health crisis. And one of the reasons, she says, is that there's an alarming amount of confusion out there about the role of antibiotics and even the right way to take them. And so we want to get a little more knowledge about this and make sure that you know what you're doing when it comes to antibiotics and ask some of the important questions like, is it over? Are we done? Have the germs won the battle? And are antibiotics even working anymore? So joining us now is a senior associate at the UPMC Center for Health Security and an expert in infectious diseases, critical care, emergency medicine, a published journal author, I want to make sure that I say this correctly, Dr. Amish Adulja.
Right, perfect.
Oh, good. Straight A's right off of the bat. I appreciate that, doctor, and thanks for being here with us. Now, people probably assume they know what antibiotics are, but in your experience, do they? And how do you define antibiotics for everybody else here to know?
So the easiest way to define antibiotics is that this is a chemical substance that you can ingest or have given to you intravenously or intramuscularly that will stop the growth or kill bacteria. So the important part of that definition is that these are our only effective against bacteria. They don't work on the common cold. They don't work on influenza. They're really only to be reserved for true bacterial infections.
Okay, as opposed to a virus.
Correct. And we know that people, when they go in with coughs and colds and upper respiratory tract infections, they often leave their doctor's office or an urgent care clinic with a prescription for an antibiotic, and it's not going to have any effect because these are predominantly caused by viruses. And this is one of the areas where we've seen antibiotics being misused rampantly all over the world.
Now, do those patients leave the clinic with the prescription for antibiotics because they demand to have them, or is it because doctors just say, here, take an antibiotic, that you're probably going to get well anyway, but the antibiotic will help you in a placebo sort of way?
It's really a combination of both. Patients like to have a prescription. They like to have something given to them that's going to make them feel better. And doctors don't want to often take the time to explain to a patient that their symptoms are the result of a viral infection and antibiotics are not going to help. So it's just an easy solution to give somebody an antibiotic. And what ends up happening is people lose sight of the fact that these antibiotics are a precious commodity. And when we misuse them, we lose them. And that's what we're really facing now, is a post-antibiotic era.
Yeah. Now, misusing that. So obviously, there's two parts to that. First, the prescription. But the second part is, once you get the prescription home, do you use them properly? And according to the World Health Organization, perhaps a lot of people are just using them wrong. So what's the right and wrong way?
The right way to use an antibiotic is, first, you get the prescription when you really truly have a bacterial infection. And then when you do get the antibiotic, that you take it for the appropriate duration, what's been recommended to be taken, because you want to make sure that when you do have a bacterial infection, that you eradicate or kill or stop the growth of as much of the bacteria that's causing the symptoms as you can, because, you know, we live in an evolutionary world where there's natural selection. And when a person takes an antibiotic and they don't take it for the full course, there may be some bacterial pathogens that are left over, and they will then have no competition, and they may overgrow. They may have been a small population that were resistant to the antibiotic, and now they've got no competition for resources with their other family members that have all been killed, and now they overgrow, and now that person is at risk for a resistant infection.
Yeah, and so now we have superbugs, or do we?
Yeah, we definitely have superbugs. For example, when you talk about staph infections, that people get routine skin. And soft tissue infections with staph, half of them are of the MRSA variety, which wasn't the case decades ago.
Yeah, MRSA, as the lay people call it. Yeah, all right, so when you have the superbug, then there's no way to treat it, and you just have to hope that whatever antibiotic you take slows it down a little bit long enough for you to get your resistance back, and maybe your body takes you the rest of the way. But if you are immune deficient in one way or another, it could mean the end of you.
Right. We do have, you know, a pretty good menu of antibiotics, but they are getting, we're running out, you know, desperately running out of new options. We're in the situation that we call, you know, bad bugs with no drugs. And we are increasingly having to go to second line and third line antibiotics in order to treat infections, which, you know, in the earlier decades were treated with plain penicillin, for example. And what ends up happening is you will run into cases where you have nothing left to treat a patient with, and you're left in an era left in the pre-penicillin era, where doctors really couldn't do anything, and you just have to basically give up and hope the person pulls through.
You know, late in the 1970s, right around 79, maybe even 1980, I used to be involved in the production of a national radio talk show hosted by a doctor, and at the time, antibacterial soaps were just starting to come out, and he made a big deal on a regular basis about how he thought that was a bad idea. And so now, a few decades later, is that part of the conversation that we're having today, all the antibacterial products that we use on a daily basis?
Well, antibacterial soaps are kind of a separate issue, and I don't recommend that people use them for routine hand washing, and I myself don't use them for routine hand washing. Plain soap and water is fine.
Yet walk around every corner in a hospital, and they have one of those dispensers, don't they?
But that's not a normal setting. That's in a hospital setting where you do have the transmission of bacteria from doctors' hands to patients, from nurses' hands to patients.
So there
we want people to be using the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. It's not the same thing as when you're doing your dishes in your kitchen. We do see when people do overuse the antibacterial soaps that there may be more resistant bacteria in the kitchen environment, for example, on people's hands, for example. So we don't want to overuse them, but they do definitely have a role in hospital settings. You do want to control control the bacteria on people's hands in a hospital setting, but that's a separate issue.
Okay. So the arms race seems to be coming to an end, or is it? Do we just keep going for newer and more powerful antibiotics, or is there going to be a different way to defeat bacteria and these superbugs?
it's basically going to be a plethora of different approaches. Yes, we still need to invest in discovering new antibiotics and improving our current antibiotics. The other thing is we do need to start thinking about moving beyond antibiotics. Can we develop vaccines for some of these infections so that people don't get them to begin with? Can we develop ways of changing the bacteria inside a person's body, the so-called microbiome approach, where you look at the what bacteria are on a person and modify that so that they don't get these infections, or that they, when they do get these infections, the other bacteria are actually crowded out and it doesn't cause symptoms? Can you change an immune system so people's symptoms are minimized? So there is a whole host of things. There's even viruses that you can administer to people that kill bacteria. So there are a whole bunch of approaches that are moving us beyond antibiotics.
And are we even attempting to turn the bacteria on itself and destroy itself through gene therapy or some other thing? I don't know. I'm not a scientist.
There are really high-tech approaches where we can try and restore susceptibility to a bacteria. So if you have a resistant bacteria, you could maybe deliver a gene, change its genetic makeup so that it becomes sensitive again. These are all very innovative approaches, but they are all a little bit away in the future. We need to keep working on them. But for the short term, the best thing people can do is start using the antibiotics that we do have appropriately and not wasting this resource.
Yeah, fascinating conversation, and we thank you for spending some time with us on this. And we'll be more thoughtful when we visit the doctor next time when we just have a cough or a sneeze. Dr. Amish Adulja, thank you so much, sir.
Thanks for having me.
All right, there you go. Now, are you frightened to death?
No, not really. It's funny. I was just reading something about bacteria where the article claimed that the human body has more bacteria in it than there are actually people on the planet, like each of us do.
Yeah.
Supposedly some of it's good bacteria, right?
Sure.
And that at the end of the day, if the bacteria does become immune to all of these antibacterials that we're using, that they could certainly win the war if there was one between humans and bacteria.
So just imagine kissing somebody is a little like waging chemical warfare.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Your bacteria meets theirs.
That is crazy, isn't it?
It's going to be crazy to see what they come up with next to combat these bacterias.
All right. Very good. Now, by the way, the next hour is going to be packed with so many things, and we want to make sure that you know about all of these things. Do you want to know what's
Absolutely.
Coming up in the next hour?
Yeah, fill us in.
Good, because that's it for this hour. You have to wonder, after all that happened in Paris, is it a good idea to go there right now? Just think about that question. Before you have a knee-jerk answer to that question, think about it for a second. And the other question to ask is, can Paris bounce back? Think about their history and what the nation of France and Paris specifically has been through. Our travel guy has a historical perspective and a practical perspective as well. And he's going to join us in the next hour of this program. Also, as we progress in this country toward more and more states legalizing recreational marijuana, they've got to have bureaucrats in charge of everything, right? So imagine you're the head of pot. You're the pot head for your state. Well, California, among other states, are hiring. We'll tell you about that and more in the next hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Ports of Call Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Ports of Call Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsofcalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. Some of the stories we have for you this hour, your French flag profile silhouette on your social media profile is pretty cool, I must admit. But we may have the best way to show solidarity with Paris. Taco Bell is the first in what will probably be a wave of fast food restaurants making significant changes to their menus. We'll tell you what. Oxford Dictionary's Word of the Year. And here's news you can use. The top role-play costumes people fantasize about the most. I'm Phil Hewlett. Chris Martin is here with you today. And we'll get this hour started with you, Chris. And my goodness, as the states keep legalizing recreational marijuana, we suspect that California might be among one of the next. The bureaucrats up in the state house have to come up with a department of pot, and somebody's got to manage all of that. They've got to have a director, a head, a pothead, right?
That's right.
Is California hiring?
California is hiring. They've put an ad in the unemployment pages, actually. California State is accepting applications for a new regulatory agency head.
Yes.
That will be known as the Medical Marijuana Chief. So you
look
know,
at that. Governor Brown creating jobs.
That's it. One job at a time. You know, you were talking about recreational marijuana, but here in California, that's not quite legal
yet. Not yet.
Though that whoever will be the medical marijuana chief, I'm sure that role will be expanded to cover recreational marijuana.
Sure.
If, in fact, it becomes part of our society.
Yep.
This medical marijuana chief will join the hundreds of agencies in California that regulate things like food and agriculture and medicine and all of those things that we have to deal with on a
daily basis. You ever have a chance to get the actual budget for your state and look through, because what happens is a governor comes through or a legislature says we need to create a blue ribbon panel, or we need to create a department of this or a department of that, or we need to fund this. And once it's in the baseline, it stays there forever, and they raise the budget each year to continue operating whatever that is. I looked at California's budget once, and there are things in there, a lot of agricultural-oriented departments. Like there's a department that counts the number of bumps on a strawberry.
Get out of here.
Or something
that's part of that department.
No, there is a specific department that handles the various varieties of strawberries, and they have to make sure that they come out right. And things as ridiculous as that. There are so many of them in the budget, and they could probably just close about 80% of it, and we'd be home free.
Well, maybe that's a very important part of strawberry raising. You know, people often forget we are like one of the leading agricultural locations on the planet. I think like the ninth largest in the world.
So
right?
It makes sense then if we do eventually, and it looks like that's a fait accompli here in the state of California, do eventually vote in favor and make recreational marijuana law, that as an agricultural state, we will start growing it legally. Is that correct?
Well, we're already growing it legally, but for medical purposes.
But I mean in a large scale for hemp and for smoking and for all the other things that people do with it. They wear it on their face just at parties, just to be silly.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's fait accompli.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means, but I'm going
to
say
you know, in solidarity with our friends in Paris, we have to inject as much French language into the show as possible.
Hundreds of legal dispensary directors statewide will be answering to the soon-to-be chief of the Bureau of Medical Marijuana. They say this puts a lot of power in the hands of one person, owners are a little bit nervous.
Is he a smoker? Is he a grower? Is he a doctor? What's his background?
Here's where it gets interesting, because the job description does not require any marijuana background at all. As a matter of fact, the primary experience required is bureaucratic. That's right. Bureaucratic experience. They say it's essentially a licensing and enforcement agency, so it's important to have dealt with regulatory regimes.
What's the gig pay?
I'm assuming good money, Phil. You know, you get into those government jobs.
It's a G1.
At least 45 grand a year.
No, come on.
Starting
45
salary.
Grand a year? No.
Between that, maybe 60 if you're real good.
No. Now this gig? No. That's going to be $2,250,000 to $400,000 a year.
No, well, that's what it averages out when you take into consideration all the benefits that they get. You know, like the health benefits and retirement benefits and stuff.
Yeah. All right. Just the benefit to tell other people what to do. 45 grand. Have you looked at California bureaucratic jobs lately?
No, you're right. I think that's actually like the minimum wage in our state now.
It is. Yes. Working at a fast food joint, you can make that kind of money. All right, moving along now. We've got that. But then there's this guy. I was reading about this guy who just stumbled upon something that Twitter was working on surreptitiously. And now it has become public, and you know all about it. What is it?
I do know all about it. I pay special attention to this subject because we were talking about that terrible idea of Twitter changing their star to a heart for favoriting something.
And you're all bent out of shape about this, aren't you?
I'm not the only one, Phil. There was a huge backlash. It was a very divisive change that they made, and a lot of longtime users didn't like it. Why? Because, like we discussed, a heart means a lot more than a star. So people become reluctant to say, I like something.
You don't love it. You just like it.
Right.
And a heart means love.
Yeah.
And you don't give up your love willy-nilly.
No, that's right. And I think I use those exact words, willy-nilly. You can't just be using your love willy-nilly.
No.
Right. Now, a Twitter user has stumbled onto a developer program of the app that allows users to react to tweets by using a selection of emojis, which only makes
emojis.
Sense.
Emojis. Right? Mm-hmm. Emojis. Those are those little smiley faces and others that make different emotions with a stupid little drawing.
So something comes across your Twitter feed, you want to respond to it, now you would essentially have a selection of emotions or reactions to the subject.
What's the emoji for meh?
Yeah, there's one of those. It's like the little yellow face with just a straight mouth.
Oh, is that what it is?
Or maybe even a little bit sideways, like shoulder shrug.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And then people will start judging you based on the emojis you receive.
That's exactly right.
And maybe Twitter will come up with an algorithm to come up with who's the most popular person and who's the most meh.
Who's the most loved? Who's the most hated? Because, you know, emojis, you can use emojis to say that you're celebrating something, that you're angry about something,
yes.
You love something, you
right.
Like something, you're meh about something.
Meh. All right, fine. So are they going to do that? Are they going to implement that? Because wasn't Facebook going to do that too?
Facebook recently talked about doing something very similar, a wide range of ways to be able to respond to something. Although when Twitter was asked directly about whether or not this is something they plan on rolling out, they sent out an emoji of a monkey covering his mouth.
Oh, great.
With his hands.
Here's more proof that emojis are on their way to replacing the English language.
Okay.
Oxford Dictionaries just announced their word of the year for 2015, and they picked an emoji, specifically a smiley face that's laughing so hard tears are coming out of its eyes.
Well, that's not a word, Phil.
No, but apparently it's the most used emoji in the U.S. and the U.K. The editors say, although emojis have been a staple of texting teens for some time, emoji culture exploded into the global mainstream over the past year. Emojis have come to embody a core aspect of living in a digital world. And even though, as you point out, Chris, an emoji is not a word, it is the word of the year. They say they don't have any plans to add them to their dictionaries yet. The actual word emoji, E-M-O-J-I, has been in the Oxford English Dictionary since 2013.
What does it stand for? Emotional response to something?
Heck if I know. You're going to have to look at, where's our Oxford Dictionary? You could look it up.
Sounds like a ploy for attention.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ridiculous. They're a dictionary. They work with words.
Yes.
Not pictures.
Exactly. That's what we're talking about. All right, fine. So you like the fast food, right?
I'm a fan.
Is there anything more perfect than a fast food burrito when you're hungry?
No.
That does the trick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fast food burrito.
Because then you can eat it on the ride, too.
Yeah. And if it's real hot, the cheese and the beans kind of melt out the back and land in your lap while you're driving.
Yep.
And then hilarity ensues. But no, the folks over at Taco Bell have big news about their menu. And we think that all the other fast food joints are going to follow in suit. And this affects you. You should know about it. And we'll tell you next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right. Take a look around your room right now. And, hey, you know what? That's a nice room you've got there. You keep things tidy. We're impressed. Well, anyway, that's all. I just wanted you to take a look around the room. And thank you for listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. It really means a lot to us that you do that. And if you tell your friends about it, that would be even better. Share about us on social media when you see us post on our Facebook page and on our Twitter account and all the other places where you can see and hear about us. And if you ever get the feeling that you want to say something to us, you can go ahead and do that. If you have a microphone on your computer, and I know you have one on your phone, there's a little blue tab on the website, philhewlettandfriends.com. You click on that tab and a little dialogue comes up. You press record. You record what you want to say, and you can be totally anonymous. It asks for your email address, but it's optional. You don't have to put it in. You could be told. You could say your name is Gladys, okay?
Or use something funny.
Yeah,
right. Seymour.
Seymour. Seemore.
Mm-hmm.
And leave us a little voice message, and we'll hear it. We'll listen to it, and we will very likely play it on the show.
Another option is just call in directly to Phil's cell phone. Get ready. Grab a pen and piece of paper. Write this down. He'll pipe you straight through. It's 714-585.
Yeah.
Beep, 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 beep.
Oh, come on. Now you can Google and find my... It's, by the way, you Google my name. My cell phone's out there. That's why I don't answer it. I don't recognize the number. I don't pick it up. So leave me a message and I decide whether I want to return it. You know? So, hello, it's ISIS.
Can't you have that taken down once you find out that that information's
now, I made it
up there?
I made it readily available. I was just open about it up front because I figured, hey, I don't have to answer my phone, do I?
Why, though? Were you trying to head something off at the pass by getting your number out there?
I think I was just trying to be available.
Oh, okay. Right. And then if somebody wants to leave a message,
yeah,
you check the messages. And
here's what I do. I go to the 7-Eleven every other week, and for $10, I get one of those flip phones.
Yeah. Burner.
Like they do on the spy TV shows, right? A burner, yeah. And so when I need to call somebody important,
you use your burner phone.
Yeah.
Then it's non-traceable.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I want to call Reddington, get a deal going with him, you know?
Oh, yeah.
You know who Reddington is, right?
Not a clue. Okay. I thought it was a town in Pennsylvania.
So the guy's got juice, all right? He does. Taco Bell.
Okay.
Big announcement coming, huh?
Big announcement made yesterday, actually. Taco Bell announced it will stop using eggs laid by caged hens by January 1st, 2017.
All right, so
mere weeks from now,
the hens then, if not in cages, they
or
will be
weeks
in
a month.
They will be in here. Coops or free range egg layers.
I'm assuming it means that all the hens that they gather eggs from will be free range hens.
Yeah,
free range. Yeah, running around outside every day will be like Easter.
So the egg farmer's got to guess where his hens are laying their eggs.
Exactly. That's why I said every day will be like Easter. Hopefully it's like 10 acres of high brush, too.
Well, what's going to happen to the cost of a dozen of eggs if the egg farmer's got to go hunting around for his eggs?
It's going to increase. It's going to increase. But, well, not only that, but I think that it's got to be more expensive to run a cage-free farm.
Yeah.
I mean, it just has to be. Otherwise, farmers would already be using that method.
What's Taco Bell sell breakfast burritos? Is that what they put it?
They just got into the breakfast game. They're not as big as some of the other guys that are into it, but recently started doing breakfast.
Yeah.
And seems to be working for them. They say it's somewhere around 10% of their annual revenue.
Yeah.
Just in breakfast, just
wow.
In putting eggs out there wrapped in tortillas.
And look, McDonald's sells eggs all day long now, 24/7.
They do. Matter of fact, speaking of McDonald's, they said that they will be doing the same thing at their 16,000 locations, but it's going to take a little longer. They said that within 10 years, they'll switch to cage-free
eggs. How about that? Here's something related, Chris. If you haven't bought your Thanksgiving turkey yet, this might save you a few bucks. Don't pay more just because the label says it was raised cage-free. With turkeys, that's just marketing nonsense. Let me explain why. With chickens, cage-free is a real thing. When you buy cage-free eggs, it means the hen didn't spend its whole life in a tiny cage. But every single turkey that comes from a farm in America is already cage-free because they're just not raised in cages like that. Companies only put it on the label to make you feel good. And isn't that why we buy things anyway? It's why we drive a Prius, right? I'm helping the environment. You know, well, okay, I'm pragmatic. I drive a Prius because it gets me in the diamond lane when I'm all by myself. Okay.
And you only have to fill up every 18 days.
Yeah, it's saving me a little money, and it's getting me places faster, even though the car's a piece of trash.
There goes our Prius partnership.
Oh, sorry about that. But for the moment when a lot of people buy their little Prius or they buy something cage-free or whatever it is, they feel like somehow they're one with the universe and they're doing something to improve the environment.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, fine.
You stick that on the label. They've put in all kinds of stuff on
Prius labels. lands in a junk heap at the down where they put all the destroyed cars, and it has the same half life as every other car, doesn't it? In fact, all the batteries I bet that battery in the Prius leaves a bigger carbon footprint on the planet than the battery in your gas guzzler. What do you think about that? Anyway, you might also see the phrase "young turkey" on the label, or the term "hormone-free."
Oh, yeah. I've seen that.
Both of those are meaningless, too, when it comes to turkeys. It's illegal to use hormones on turkeys in the U.S. And every turkey they sell at grocery stores is young. No one's out there feeding them for an extra 5 years just so they can sell you an old turkey.
Because nobody wants an old turkey because the meat would be tough.
So if you pay a premium for any of the following words on the label of a turkey: young, cage-free, or hormone-free, you're a fool.
What about 100% natural?
That is such...
How about that one?
That is such...
I'm gonna buy into that.
Here's a word: bogosity.
Hey, do you think turkeys lay eggs, right?
Of course they do.
Can you eat turkey eggs?
Why not?
I don't know, because I've never seen it or heard of such
Maybe
a thing.
Maybe it's hard to market turkey eggs. Like, nobody's buying ostrich eggs in the United States at the grocery stores because we're probably just grossed out. What am I going to do with an egg the size of my head?
Make one big-ass omelet.
Yes. Well, they do that in Australia.
They do?
Of course they do.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try that. I want to try an ostrich egg and a turkey egg.
All right, good.
Separately, of course.
Yeah. Now, I don't know. That's a good question. I've never seen turkey eggs for sale.
Mm-mm. Maybe that's why they don't cage them, because there's no market for the eggs.
Yeah, what's the point?
Yeah.
But, hey, you may be onto something. You open up the first turkey farm where you sell the turkey eggs, you could be a turkey egg millionaire.
All right, good. I'm going to write that down on my list of ingenious ideas.
It is ingenious.
I need to do something. Become a millionaire.
Yeah. And have a castle.
That would be nice.
E! Exclamation point. E! Online is helping you rank the best and worst Disney castles of all time. Just in case you ever dreamed about living in a castle. Number 15, we have a list of 15. Maleficent's Tower and Sleeping Beauty. 14, Nottingham Castle and Robin Hood. They're getting better. Merida's Castle from Brave. King Triton's Palace from The Little Mermaid. Well, it's underwater. What are you supposed to do? You can't breathe under there. Elsa's Ice Palace from Frozen. Here's the top 10 now. Snow White's Castle. Aurora's Castle from Sleeping Beauty. Beast's Castle from Beauty and the Beast. That was a pretty happening castle.
That one was great. It had living furniture.
Yes. Cinderella's Palace. Cusco's Palace from The Emperor's New Groove. Jasmine's Palace from Aladdin. Now, I thought that one was spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
That one was all
real
right.
Real nice.
The Palace from Atlantis. I can't tell you anything about that one. Arendelle Castle from Frozen. Two castles from Frozen here. Prince Eric's Castle from Little Mermaid. Yeah, now that one was a happening castle.
I remember that
I remember
too.
Little Mermaid coming down the stairs. Remember? Nice little L-shaped descent. And number one, castle? Rapunzel's Castle from Tangled.
What? It wasn't even a castle.
No, before she had to go up into that tower.
What about the castle? What about the Disney castle?
At Disneyland?
Don't you think that actually belongs in the list? Yeah, like the one that Tinkerbell flies out of and taps her wand against.
That place is a heap.
For the start of every movie.
You ever go in there?
No.
You can't even move your shoulders. Just like, you know, there's no room in there.
Ah, well, no wonder it didn't make the list.
There's a gift shop in it, for goodness sakes.
Looks good from the outside.
By
great
the way,
curb appeal.
By the way, and rightfully so, our executive producer, Mike Stark, points out, that's Sleeping Beauty's castle.
Oh, is it? That's Sleeping Beauty's castle?
Yes.
All right. Well, then it made the list. Which I'm pleased about.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one.
And right up at the top of the castle, isn't that Maleficent in the tower looking out of the top of the castle, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
She's just everywhere because she's Malfeasant and Maleficent.
Yeah. She's a bad chick.
Yeah. All right. You know what? The whole Paris thing has got everybody talking all over the world. Eagles of Death Metal. You know who that is.
I do
now.
That's
the band that was playing when the shooting began. And the concert where they were playing in Paris came under attack on Friday last week. Some British fans feel bad for the horror they experienced, so they've set up a campaign to try to get the band, Eagles of Death Metal, a number one spot on the UK singles chart this week. They're asking people to download the band's cover of the Duran Duran song, Save a Prayer, before midnight on Thursday this week. And in an equally cool move, Simon Le Bon, the lead singer of Duran Duran, said they'll donate all proceeds they get from the sales. So how about that?
All right.
And on the topic, as people cancel their travel plans in droves after the attacks in Paris, I wonder, for a few reasons, and maybe you do too, if now is one of the best times to travel to the City of Lights. Our travel guy offers his unique perspective on this, and he joins us next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends, Adda.com. You're at the website. Look around. There's a show fun page. And today, a couple of particularly fun things to look at. There's a compilation of sports movies. And these are coaches in the movies giving speeches. Some of them are great. Some of them are silly. But it's a compilation. You should check it out. And then there's also if you haven't seen the commercial yet for Barbie, the latest Barbie, it's like a fashion model Barbie. And it's the first time they've had a boy in the commercial. Have you seen this one, Chris?
No, but I'm assuming that the boy is
he's happy to be playing with Barbie.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh,
he's
right.
Excited. He wasn't making fun of it.
There's a new twist.
I think he says this Barbie's fierce. Pretty sure those are his words. Ken was nowhere to be found in the commercial. Now, turning to all things Paris right now, because it's been in the news since Friday, the horrific attack. It makes you want to just go out and find those ISIS guys and grab them by the collar and shake them and say, what's the matter with you? What is this solving? Really, nothing. It's just creating chaos. But really, perhaps that's what they're all about. And so the world's going to shake all of this out sooner or later. Something's going to happen one way or another. We don't know what it is yet. But the question comes to mind. Paris makes a great deal of money off of tourism. And it's a beautiful place to visit. It always has been a beautiful place to visit. And I suspect a lot of people are afraid to go there now. But is it actually right now a good time to go for a few reasons? Let's bring in our travel guy, Gary Warner, who has on this show repeatedly said that Paris is one of his most favorite places to visit.
That's right.
And, you know, everybody, of course, standing in solidarity with our Parisian brothers and sisters after the ISIS attack Friday. But this is quite a blow to the fraternity and liberty they enjoy there. Can Paris bounce back? What do you think?
Yes, I think Paris can bounce back. I mean, this is a city that has gone through so much turmoil, you know, several revolutions, occupied by the Germans twice, Corsican bombers, Palestinian bombers, now ISIS, these bombers. This was the bloodiest attack ever. 136 people died. Could have been worse. The government decided to not let people out of the soccer stadium after the first blast, and the other two guys who blew themselves up were waiting for people basically to come streaming out of the stadium, and then were going to pull their jackets.
Yeah.
But the thing is that nowhere is safe. Nowhere is not safe, I guess, is what I'm saying.
All right outside our studio here is not safe. If you think
That's
about
right.
it, in that perspective, I mean, it could happen anytime, anywhere. Something could happen. Something could
yes.
fall out of the sky. You could get hit by a truck. A tree could fall. A gas main could explode. It's life.
It is life, but now, I mean, let's not go too far with that. There are some things that people, you know, should know about Paris, and that is that it is home to 1.7 million Muslims in the city and the area around it, which is the whole thing is called Île-de-France.
But that in itself does not make Paris an unsafe place.
No, but what I'm saying is it's twice the number of number two, which is Greater London.
Okay.
And that there's also the movement between the cities because of the Eurozone, so that these bombers, a lot of them came out of Brussels, and a neighborhood in Brussels, which is particularly radicalized. There's a report that's been coming out in about the last hour that there is concrete proof of an imminent attack in Hanover, Germany.
Yeah.
It can happen in any of these places.
So there's an uptick of potential violence in Europe because, the fact that there are Muslims in any particular area, I mean, people travel to Singapore and Indonesia all the time, and they don't think twice about that.
Sure. And even within Europe, the Muslim communities are different in terms of their radicalization, where they come from. In France, it's mostly from the former North African colonies. There's a lot of the people who come from Syria are especially unhappy with France because France, along with Britain, basically created Syria after World War I when it was basically a fake nation, essentially, did not allow the Arab Arabia for the Arabs that they'd hoped for. So, it's Turks in Germany and Pakistani in Britain, and so each one is different. They work together both for good and for bad. One of the interesting things about Paris is that there's been a grand mosque in Paris that was built by the government in 1922 to thank their Muslim colonies for the over 100,000 soldiers who died fighting Germany in World War I, mostly at Verdun. So they also the mosque was also famous for hiding Jews during World War II from the Nazis when the Nazis occupied Paris. So these things kind of, you can't make generalities.
No, everything's interweaved in our human condition. Now, the overarching question that I wanted to press, and the historical perspective, of course, is useful and appreciated. But the overarching question here is, with all the heightened security there in Paris now and all the awareness and the fact that they've already hit, would they hit again, is it not perhaps the safest time right now to travel to Paris? And if you did travel, are people as welcoming as they would be otherwise?
In some ways, yes. Oh, they'll be very welcoming if you come and basically say you came to support Paris in this hour of need.
To bring your money to Paris and help with their economy at a time when people are leaving in droves.
Right. I came to Paris in 2005 when they were having the worst riots of their history. Out in the suburbs, you couldn't get from the airport into town. I finally was able to get myself and my family into town. Over 3,000 arrests, burning cars, the whole thing. And people were really happy to see Americans there. So I think that if you went now, you would get a very good welcome, as it were. It's sort of the off season, so prices already are fairly low, and you can look around at airfares and things like that. It's a great time to go right before Christmas. And yes, I mean the thing is that any place, any one of these cities could be the next target. And the areas that were hit in Paris were not the high tourist areas, the Left Bank or the Champs-Élysées, or places like that where there's a lot of police and military presence. It was in sort of, I don't want to say working class, because there's nothing working class really left in central Paris, but it was in areas that were just sort of more for the Parisians, that sort of area. So, if you want to go and see the Eiffel Tower and things like that, right now it's probably as safe as any time.
I read this morning that the Eiffel Tower has been shut down for a period of time. Did I misread that?
I'm not sure. I know there's 3 days of mourning that are going on, and that there will be no fireworks for 3 days for various things. I think that right now they're doing security sweeps, and then they're going to do the mourning, and then within a week or so things will even out. I wouldn't go right now. You know, but if you wanted to go for, say, around Thanksgiving time, early December, which is a wonderful time in Paris, you know, I think you'd be fine, because it's happened in London. It's happened in New York. You know, there's just no, you know, unless you're going to stay in your house.
Yeah, and that's the whole thing, Gary. The terrorists, and people always say that, the terrorists win if you stay in your house.
Right.
You got to go on and continue with your life and your economy and your tourism and your enjoyment of places, because they would love nothing better than to create turmoil and chaos in the economy of various states in Europe.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And what I tell people who are worried about these kind of things is to, if you're really worried about them, there's little things of risk management you can do. Fly over on an airline that's not connected with either France or the United States, for example. Maybe Air Tahiti Nui, which has nonstops from Los Angeles to Paris.
Yeah.
You know, yep.
All you can drink Mai Tais.
Yeah. Or you know, take one of the other airlines that stop over. Stay in you know, non-chain, non-American or, you know, big time French hotels, and stay in areas that are a little bit maybe out of the way, you know, just a little bit, you know.
Maybe you should couch surf. Stay at a family's home somewhere.
Well, there's a lot of people who do that. And I don't know about I haven't gotten that far, but, you know, smaller hotels of 16, 18 beds or something like that.
Right.
You know, that's the French tradition anyway. So they're just small things you can do like that. If you're worried about the subway, walk or take cabs. If you're worried about, you know, the train stations, then, you know, I don't know what you do on that one, but.
Yeah. I never thought that the train stations were all that secure, frankly, the times that I've been in Europe. And it's been a good 10 years. Perhaps it's changed. But when we took the Channel from Paris to London, we more or less just walked on with our bags and nobody stopped to check us.
Wow. Well, usually you have to go through now a complete, you know, it's like going from one country to another if you are a non-Euro citizen. Plus, with all of the people trying to get from the continent to Britain, especially in that direction, there's a lot more security there.
Yeah.
But you know, that being said, there have been bombings in the train stations. There were bombings in the Spanish train system. We had the Americans who stopped the guy with the Kalashnikov
on
the train in Paris. Again, a guy from Brussels, from that same neighborhood.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, if you wait forever, if you wait for things to be perfectly safe, you're never going to go.
Right. There's good advice. Gary Warner, always a pleasure to speak with you, and you've given us a great perspective and historical look at Paris and why perhaps people should take a look at it now and go support them. There you go.
Yep. They were here for us for the American Revolution, so go over now and spend some money.
Very good. Thanks. We'll talk to you again next week. Gary, thank you.
You know it.
All right.
Bye.
There he goes. Next, should you drink some coffee every morning? Every other week, there's a new report. Coffee good, coffee bad. Which one do we have this time? Chris is all hopped up on caffeine and can't wait to tell you next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, we're back. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. Brad Paisley, you know who that is.
It's a country artist, right?
Yeah. He apparently likes to brag about his at-home bar with his collection of illegal moonshine. Now it's time to hear about his at-home fishing hole. He says, quote, "We built a pond on our property, which is my favorite piece of the whole property. I work on that pond like most people work on their yards. I make sure that thing is stocked, healthy. I landscape it with boulders around certain places and built a sandy beach on it."
Wow, this guy sounds country to his core.
That's what he sounded. That was him talking just then. The pond is full of fish, and it's got a beach and rocks and the whole thing. And how about that? He's got himself a fishing hole.
Well, even without the southern accent that you put on his...
How dare you? That was not me.
I mean, the guy's bragging about having moonshine behind the bar and building his own fishing hole.
Yeah.
That is country. That is country all the way.
Yeah. All right. You seem a little edgy today.
I am a little bit edgy today. I drank coffee today. Which I don't do often. We had coffee one time on this show before, but
how much coffee did you have?
Too much. It was like a 24-ounce cup. It was one of those AM/PM tall cups of coffee.
What is that? A venti?
I think that's what they call it at Starbucks. At AM/PM, it's just it's a heart attack for me.
Yeah.
Because I don't react well to too much caffeine.
So your heart's pumping and trying to crawl out of your chest right now.
Yeah, I feel like I'm trying to crawl out of my skin almost. I felt like that most of the show.
It sounds like coffee bad.
I don't know. Maybe it's good for the cardiovascular system. We'll see what Harvard says, because a study out of Harvard University suggests that people who drink regular moderate amounts of coffee are less likely to die from a range of diseases, including diabetes and heart disease.
No kidding. All right. I have a cup of coffee every day. Generally one cup, unless we go to the breakfast restaurant someplace, and then they keep filling it up. And my goodness, by the time we're done with the meal, I've had a whole pot of coffee.
Do you feel it? Do you feel it internally when you've had that much coffee? Can you tell that the caffeine is pulsing?
Not if I've eaten a bunch of bread and muffins and cheese.
Then you don't even know. It's just coffee flavor.
It just gets all absorbed. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Have you ever been high on caffeine?
Oh, yeah,
there's
sure.
been times, right?
Sure.
You just perspirate and your heart beats fast.
Yeah. And the harder thing is just to quit it cold turkey, because then you start getting the headaches and all that. And you're looking for the caffeine, and the headache is the immediate thing that you get.
Yeah, your body responds negatively to it. The study's based on thousands of people and hundreds of thousands of surveys. One to five cups a day of coffee is associated with lower risk and total death and suicide.
Yeah. You want to know how weird people are, Chris? I mean, really weird.
Sure.
I have the seven weirdest things people have found on their significant other's phone.
Oh, good. This sounds interesting.
Yeah. just weird stuff.
Yeah.
A picture of a pigeon eating a pie.
That's
number seven. They get weirder as we go.
I'd have to take a picture of that, too.
A picture of someone else's pet spider.
That's okay. Weird, mainly because I don't like spiders.
A period tracking app on a man's phone. Period. You
that's
know,
just a guy that...
A lady. A lady's menses. The
menstruation.
Period. Yeah, menstruation. This is the one that scares me, because I know there's a whole race of men out there called bronies. A My Little Pony app.
Right.
These are guys that love My Little Pony, and they put on the furry costumes, and they have conventions. And
I'm
who
sure
knows
there's girls,
what's
too,
going
like
on.
My Little Pony.
This was a guy with a My Little Pony app. Okay. Pictures of, number three, pictures of strangers wearing clothes the person wanted to buy. It's not that strange, is it?
No.
Unless it's just people on the street.
For girls, I don't think it's that weird.
Multiple pictures of cat poop.
Now that's weird.
Yeah.
Because
you find that on your significant other's phone. What's this?
And why?
And what else don't I know about you? And a picture of a sex toy stuck to a car window.
That's just funny.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah,
that's all that was. Oh, look, check that out. Take a picture. Survey also found 10% found signs that the person was cheating on them. Not sure if that's more or less disturbing than the pigeon eating a pie, but there's there's just something unsavory about that, I guess.
Mm-hmm. All right. Phone contains so much information.
If you have nieces, nephews, kids, grandkids, whatever it is, you walk through the house at your own peril because of all the things that are scattered about. And what's the most popular toy on the planet, Chris?
Well, the Legos are one of the most popular, for sure.
It's got to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it encourages kids to be ingenuitive. It's wholesome.
Ingenuitive. as anything that encourages kids to be ingenuitive, I'm all for.
You like how I brought that word back?
Yes, I do.
And that was not on purpose. It's not like some sort of callback. It's literally a word that is jammed into my vocabulary.
It's your word. Well, that's okay. Brain. I used bogosity earlier, but I preface it by saying, let me make up a word now.
Yeah.
So, all right, fine. So let's say your house is cluttered with Legos, which it can be in this day and age. What do you do? You could get foot injury.
Well, Lego's one step ahead of you to prevent your foot injury. They've come out with a double-soled slipper. It's a Lego slipper, really, and it has these double-padded thick soles.
Yeah.
So that way, when you're walking around the living room, you don't catch the corner of a Lego on the bottom of your foot that sends shooting pain up your nervous system through your legs and into your back. And it's a promotional item for Christmas. It's a pretty good idea, though, right?
Yeah. I think
it's
a great idea.
Who hasn't been walking through the living room barefoot?
Get a pair of those for grandma.
Mm-hmm. They say no longer will you have to wear steel toe boots to make it through your living room. Now just slide on the Lego slipper.
I love that. Now, go ahead and tap into your kinky side for a second. Costumes are an excellent way to spice up your sex life, are they not?
Cosplay, I think they call that.
Is that what they call it?
I think so.
I've always wondered what cosplay meant. Especially right now in the post-Halloween sweet spot, shall we call it, when you could probably pick up a costume for 70% off. Sexy plus frugal equals extra sexy.
Right.
Doesn't it? All right. A new survey found the top 10 role-playing costumes people fantasize about. Check it out. Number 10, police officer.
Okay. I like that one. Sexy police officer, obviously. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Going to have to take out my stick.
All right. Took that too far.
Victoria's Secret model.
Right.
Now, like okay, fine. One. I don't know who can pull that off, but okay, fine. Masseuse.
Okay.
Firefighter.
What does a masseuse wear?
Oily hands.
Okay.
Firefighter. Flight attendant. Playboy bunny. Mm. Secretary. These are all like lady costumes, aren't they?
Yeah, they're all pretty.
Number three,
too.
Schoolgirl. Number two, French maid. And number one, let's play doctor or nurse.
There you go. Those are right out of the standard cosplay, selections.
Yeah, except you're right, though. Masseuse and Victoria's Secret model. How do you... right?
Well, masseuse, yeah. I mean, what does a masseuse wear? Don't they just wear normal clothes?
I guess. Maybe there's like a masseuse robe or something that has a letter M on it.
Oh.
And then you have in your pocket, in your robe pocket, your lab coat. It's almost like a lab coat, right? You've got that little, like a elementary school glue bottle, and you squeeze it, and it makes that noise, and out comes the oily stuff that they massage you with.
How about an apron? I'd like a girl dressed up like Betty Crocker.
Oh, yeah?
Full-on kitchen attire.
Baking up some fun?
Yep.
Stirring it up, putting it in the oven.
Just like the baking mitts on, the full apron, baking mitts.
Trouble is, though, if you keep opening and closing the door, your cake might not rise.
Okay. That's a good point.
Listen to your elder son.
Yes, sir.
Wise words. Mm-hmm. We love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. Oh, by the way, it's almost the end of the show here. We're very close. We're on Twitter at FAF Show, PHAF Show. Facebook.com/Phil Hewlett and Friends. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark. Our producer, Brooke Peterson. Our production assistant, Ryan Hayden, who is here. Our theme song, composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Chris and all of the friends, can't wait to talk to you next time, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions,
Visit PortsacallDining.com or call 310-833-3553.